Hi, I'm Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
Reports about a Pathmark supermarket closing in East Harlem late last year probably didn't ring any alarm bells for most New Yorkers, but it left many local residents without access to convenient, affordable produce, despite the advent of an on-demand grocery service, or all the various grocery services like Fresh Direct, and also the fact that a Whole Foods market is being developed further down 125th Street. This kind of paradox might not only be becoming more commonplace, it's changing our understanding of the term food desert as a result of supermarket closings all over the city. Here to help us understand the situation is Charles Plotkin, Executive Director of the NYC Food Policy Center at Hunter College. Charles, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
I just mentioned East Harlem. The New York City Food Policy Center is particularly focused on that corner of New York. Why?
Well, we actually have a Hunter College has a campus there on 119th and 3rd for School of Social Work and the Urban School of Public Health, which has our nutrition program and community health education. So we actually built a freestanding building on 119th and 3rd. So we have a particular interest in helping that community to live a better quality life.
Wasn't there an increase from 10 to 15 supermarkets in the area in the last 5 years? Has that been reversed?
There's actually been an increase over since 2003. There's been an increase in supermarkets there, but there's been I think about five that have closed in the last few years, specifically in East Harlem. And City Fresh is one that's on 116th Street that's considering closing at this point. Their lease is up, and a drugstore chain is I guess looking at leasing the space.
So is it mostly about rents?
Well, I think it's a combination of those things. I mean, I think that you see A&P close, which closed some of their stores. I think that it's an increase in delivery services just in general around New York City. An increase in delivery services like Fresh Direct, Amazon Fresh, and Peapod, and Instacart. And also there's delivery services, mail delivery services that have, sort of been around in the last few years that have, there's a plethora of them like Blue Apron and Plated, which are delivering, food and produce directly to people's homes. So I think it's a combination around the city that's influencing closings. In East Harlem, it's probably an increase in property taxes, an increase in rent, landlords trying to, not that I feel terrible for them, but trying to make their cut. I think supermarkets are localized to some degree, meaning people, want to shop within walking distance to their home.
There's maybe another reason. I used to actually do advertising for a major supermarket chain that went out of business years ago, Bohack, which was the second largest in the region at one point. And they used to make the point that it was a very low profit business. You had to rely on volume because you made pretty much a penny on the dollar.
Right, very, very low margins, and the rule of thumb has been that approximately 2% of your sales should be for rent, and that's gone up significantly for supermarkets. So it's tough for them probably to make ends meet, and that I think increases it. But this is not necessarily a particularly brand new problem. I was looking and researching for our segment, and I noticed that the New York Times 10 years ago had a story. The title was "Where Have All the Supermarkets Gone?" And I was looking at a quote from John Casamitidis saying, and this is 10 years ago in 2006, saying, if you look at the previous 10 years, you have 50% fewer supermarkets than you had then, and going forward 10 years, the number will probably half again. Again, I think that this is something that, we've been struggling with in New York City for quite some time.
What is New York City's Fresh program? What was it designed to do?
Well, there are 21. Fresh basically was designed to offer incentives for renovation or zoning incentives, and they have very particular specific requirements, such as such as they'll do up to 40,000 square foot of retail space. They give you breaks on parking, breaks on for zoning, and they'll give you tax incentives and so forth. And there are approximately, I think, 21 right now on their website stating that they're in process or they've already been developed.
Has it made things better for supermarkets?
Well, you know, that's really a great question, and it's heavily debated. And you know, I go back and forth on the issue myself. I think that the projects so far have not necessarily made a huge, tremendous difference in terms of healthy eating. Right, the measures that have, you know, the research that has taken place has not shown that. It's not shown that there's, you know, that even in putting supermarkets in food deserts is going to improve healthy eating. And I think that there's a lot of things that go on that are, you know, that are involved in whether or not someone is going to eat healthy or buy healthy and consume healthy. So the Fresh program, I think, has created a better sense of community, because when you put a new supermarket in, I think people feel better about their community. I think that it sort of creates an anchor. Like if a mall has an anchor store, I think supermarkets, you know, can create anchor-like atmospheres in the community. I think that when someone gets a new renovated supermarket with shiny new aisles and fresh produce and things of such, that they feel better and their quality of life feels like it's improved, but doesn't necessarily, according to the research, lead to a healthy eating in the short term.
There's been a significant increase in the number of fast food franchises in East Harlem, four times as many now than in 2000. Does that contribute to the problem?
Yeah, so I think that that's, you know, when people hear the term food desert versus food swamp, that's really what we're talking about. I think that the term, you know, food desert is specifically, it targets low-income areas in which, you know, residents don't live close to affordable, healthy food retailers, whereas food swamps refer mostly to unhealthy foods available to the community and unhealthy food marketing. So, yes, the proliferation of, you know, restaurants and fast food outlets definitely impacts how people eat, right? So if you're looking at buying fresh produce and cooking it and preparing it versus going to a local fast food restaurant that might offer something that's very inexpensive, already packaged, already cooked, and it might even come with a toy for your child, that might be more appealing than going to the supermarket, going home, not maybe having the right pan, not having the right recipes. Maybe there's, you know, rodent or, you know, insect infestation issues. Maybe there's gas not working issues. So there's all kinds of things, and also being tired and having to work two jobs. So there's a lot of things that go into this equation.
My guest is Charles Plotkin, who is executive director of the New York City Food Policy Center at Hunter College, also a distinguished lecturer at CUNY Hunter, and the writer behind the nationally syndicated Diet Detective Health column. We are talking about food swamps and food deserts, among other things. The USDA has only named two areas of New York City as official food deserts, and they're both in Staten Island. Is that surprising?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's surprising to me, because we as academics and as food policy advocates, you know, look at places that that are lacking, you know, healthy access to, you know, healthy food access, and think, well, East Harlem is one of them, South Bronx is one of them. But then you'll hear arguments saying, well, they have supermarkets. But, you know, again, you know, knowing that a supermarket's within 5 minutes walking distance, I think, is a critical, important factor. We definitely shop locally. And if you ask people anecdotally, you know, they'll tell you, like, oh, well, I like to go, you know, I'll do my heavy supermarket when I have, you know, one day a week when I have the time. That's if I have the time. Or I'll go to the local store right across the street or down the block. So I think that knowing that only two designated areas, and you know, there's only two designated food deserts in Staten Island would be surprising to me.
Now, a lot of the local stores, the little grocery stores and the bodegas, don't carry vegetables. So, and they pretty much duplicate each other, even though you might find two or three on the same block.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's been healthy bodega drives by the city to try to encourage these bodegas to have, you know, more fruits and vegetables and things of sort. But, you know, it's expensive because, you know, again, we a little while ago you'd said you know, about low profit margins. Well, you know, fresh produce is one of those things that, you know, drive down their supermarket's profitability and also bodegas. So, you know, having a banana that goes bad or any kind of produce that goes bad because it wasn't purchased can be detrimental to some of these stores.
Have the supermarkets been affected by the growth of the delivery services like Fresh Direct, Amazon Prime, Peapod?
I think that they are having a significant impact. I mean, you know, Fresh Direct is opening up in the Bronx, a big facility there. You see their trucks all over the road. I'm sure that they've had a significant impact in some of these stores. And also, we're talking about places like Costco. And so not just the delivery services, it's this combination. It's, you know, Costco has opened on 116th Street right by the river, which, you know, people do go to, and they have inexpensive produce there.
And there's a Target in the same building.
Yeah, there's a Target in the same buildings, which people can get, non-perishables and things like that related to food, and there's also Peapod, which is delivering to New York City. So there is, you know, much more choice from the delivery services. But that leads to, you know, an important question, which is about SNAP, which, you know, these delivery services do not take.
So SNAP is the food stamps, federal food stamps, and none of them accept SNAP dollars?
No, so the none of the delivery services accept SNAP dollars. So Fresh Direct doesn't accept it, Peapod, Instacart, Amazon Fresh. So they're not allowed to, actually. The government restricts them. And I took a lot of time, and we've been looking at this as a food policy center at Hunter College. We've been looking to see if we could do a pilot program to get fresh produce and have these companies be able to deliver. So we approached Fresh Direct because they had a waiver, and they did a pilot program in 2012, in fact.
In the Bronx.
In the Bronx, that's correct. And they were, you know, looking to sort of improve their profile in the Bronx because there was some pushback on the Hunts Point, and them relocating to Hunts Point, and the traffic flow and some issues related to that. So they decided they were going to try to do something good for the community, and they tried this pilot program. But, anecdotally, and I don't have hands-on knowledge of this, but anecdotally, there were some issues.
And they were? What were they saying?
Well, some of the issues were, you know, first of all, I think people in these communities that they were targeting, there was no real push. There was nobody on the street sort of, getting people to sort of understand what it is. And in fact, even 2012 to 2016, the last 4 years, moving at internet-type speed and smartphone app speed, you know, there's been a lot of changes, meaning there's been more acceptance of these kinds of delivery services, as people slowly dip their toe in the water. Well, those communities have not had that opportunity. So when Fresh Direct came into that market, it didn't seem like a lot of people were interested in the service, and the company itself probably didn't push it very hard. Again, this is anecdotal. I don't have any specific facts. This is just my opinion. And so I think that what happened was the company wasn't that interested in it because when they started delivering to these to those zip codes, those two zip codes, what happened was, you know, with SNAP dollars, the waiver that they had was very specific. You had to you couldn't take the SNAP card, the EBT card, online. You had to actually take it in person. So the driver had to have a special device that would take they'd be able to swipe the card and the person put in their PIN number. So what was happening is people, you know, they'd have these delivery windows and the drivers would show up and then people might not be there to take their orders. So the Fresh Direct had to eat, you know, no pun intended here, but they had to eat the delivery. That was one of the issues.
And I would assume that would make others like Peapod reluctant to do something similar.
That is correct. And in fact, you know, when I approached Peapod several months ago, they seemed to say that it was incredibly complicated, and technologically it was incredibly complicated. And they also said infrastructure-wise it was incredibly complicated, and they're not designed to do that. And their CTO, by way of their communications director, basically said that it would take them a year to gear up for something like that, and the expense would be extraordinary. So, and other issues, I think, along these lines of this alternative would be, that people, again, want to touch and feel their produce, so that's one issue. I think people are reluctant because the SNAP has to be spent together, meaning SNAP dollars has to be spent together. So when someone's purchasing SNAP online, they can get their SNAP order, but it was difficult for them to buy other things. So it was a disincentive for them to actually, you know, use the program. You know, when you go to a register, the point of sale, they separate non-SNAP items and SNAP items, right? So it's much easier. And then they could swipe the card and they put their PIN number in for the SNAP items and they pay cash for everything else. So, you know, there's a big push right now. There's Thrive Market, which is an online grocery store, is pushing for the USDA to make it a permanent exception and to allow these food delivery companies to be able to accept SNAP, which is so critical. I mean, why should only certain people be able to have food delivered to their home? It's very convenient. Some people are working, you know, two jobs, single family households. They should be able to have delivery services like everybody else.
My guest is Charles Platkin, who's executive director of the New York City Food Policy Center at Hunter College, a distinguished lecturer at CUNY Hunter. He also is the writer behind the nationally syndicated Diet Detective Health column. And we're talking about food deserts and food swamps and the closings of supermarkets. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we're back with Charles Platkin, who's executive director of the New York City Food Policy Center at Hunter College. People have been writing in, and Gregory from the Bronx writes on our show page, "The loss of A&P, Pathmark, Walbaum's late last year hit me hard. The narrow profit margins, inflating rent, and until recently rising fuel costs all put pressure on supermarkets. I counsel my students on all aspects of food, from cooking to shopping, and I preach to them the many benefits of cooking at home. These losses hurt people who can least afford it."
I think that's a great comment, and I think, you know, the research is really showing, and it's very clear that eating outside of the home, there's higher calories, higher sodium, higher fat content, and just a general overall quality of food is less than if you were to cook at home. So that's a very important comment. And the supermarket closings, and you know, it's also, think about it, it's depressing when you have a big supermarket in your community and all of a sudden it closes and there's nothing there for you to get your food. It feels less than. And I think that's part of what people see when they see a supermarket closing. It feels like we're going in reverse, not forward.
And then there's a lot of talk about the Whole Foods that's opening on 125th Street and Malcolm X, but that's going to be a lot more expensive. And I have been told that the Green Markets, which just celebrated the 40th anniversary here in New York, have really all closed down in the East Harlem neighborhood, maybe in Harlem in general. There's one on 125th Street in Federal Plaza, but it's a very small one. The one at Marcus Garvey Park has closed because of lack of interest. And that's probably because the Green Markets are great, but they may be too expensive in some cases for local people to afford them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to live by the Union Square Green Market and shop there. But I also, you know, it's a tough choice for me sometimes because I'm looking at Trader Joe's and I'm looking at the prices there versus the prices at the farmers market, and it's more expensive, and that does happen. However, there are things like Health Bucks, which increase the value of food in those markets.
And you can use SNAP at the Green Markets.
And you could use SNAP at the Green Markets, but again, it's about choice, and sometimes, you know, people want to go with inexpensive choices. I think there's also, you know, aside from Green Markets, there's also the Green Card Initiative, which I know the Laurie Tisch Illumination Fund had helped to develop, and those are for underserved communities to be able to have the right to have, you know, green cards permits to be issued. And but the issue there is there's about 150 green card permits in Manhattan, but again, they can't designate where specifically, what street corners they can go on. So the green cards tend to populate areas that where other brick and mortar stores are. So it's, you know, and some people like the green markets better than having to go into a supermarket. But from the best of my knowledge, they don't take, you know, they don't take EBT. And, you know, there are some issues with those as well, because in areas where there where there's population that might need a green card, they're not necessarily there. They're where the supermarkets are and the other markets are. So the city has a difficult time regulating where those cards can stay.
How much of an impact does all of this have on health? How do obesity and diabetes rates in the food deserts and the food swamps compare to the rest of the city?
Right. So, you know, there has been overall, there's been somewhat of a decrease, but it's, to me, it's not necessarily completely significant. But I'll give you East Harlem as a point of reference. So, this is the South Bronx. So 35%, this is South Bronx. So 35%, there's 35% obesity in the South Bronx versus 24% in New York City. Diabetes rates are 16% in the South Bronx and 10% overall in New York City. Whereas if you look at a comparison for diabetes, so just to refresh, it's 16% diabetes, adults have 16% of adults have diabetes, whereas 10% in New York City. Cybersyntown, Turtle Bay, is 3% as a comparison. Okay, and then with obesity, again, it's 35% in the South Bronx and 24% overall in New York, but in Cybersyntown, it's 8%. So you can see that, you know, some of the differences. So, and, you know, and diabetes is a horrific disease and, you know, really has important health consequences and reduces quality of life. There's all kinds of issues related to it that people really don't understand. So I think that not having healthy access to food is part of the equation, and significantly reduces your ability to keep, you know, to keep a quality of life and reduce health risk. But there's also other issues that are here. So it's not just a supermarket lack of food access. It's also lack of nutrition education is important. Lack of of knowledge, cultural issues, and also length of time. I think we have a very short-term mentality as a society. So we want, you know, quick fixes. You put a supermarket and you expect, okay, you know, everybody's going to come. If you build it, doesn't mean everybody's going to come. It takes time. It takes a combination. It's a holistic approach, right? When I say holistic, I mean that, you know, it's everything is involved. So there's a push to reduce poverty. There's a push to reduce hunger. There's a push to reduce healthy food access. There's a push for nutrition education. There's a push for simple cooking demonstrations and cooking recipes so that people, when people can see that they can cook something up in 15 minutes or 10 minutes and it's less money than a fast food restaurant, that creates power for individuals.
It's no secret that unhealthy foods are marketed toward children. Haven't there been studies about how black children and teens see significantly more ads for unhealthy foods than white children and teens? Why is
that? Yes, actually, the Rudd Center did a study and showed that it's almost double marketing toward Hispanic and black children. So, in fact, the study showed 70% more ads in 2013 were to black children specifically. So they do target these areas, and even there's this whole push toward child-directed marketing inside and the exterior of food, fast food restaurants. So fast food companies, you know, they give that toy giveaway, giving away with Happy Meals and things like that.
Let's take a call from Andrea from the Bronx. You work at the Department of Health?
I work for a Department of Project. I work for Early Intervention.
Uh-huh.
But I have meetings in the Department of Health in the South Bronx, and we are in a total food desert. Every corner has a bodega. They sell, and nothing against Boar's Head, but in the showcases, all you see are Boar's Head deli meats. There's no fresh food. To be able to find a banana is, like, next to impossible. But I wanted to mention one other thing. Your speaker spoke of markets closing down. In the Bronx, there are a bunch of markets that do cater towards the more indigent communities. One of them is Poe Park, which is at Kingsbridge Avenue near the Grand Concourse. And they give demonstrations from the Department of Health. But it's a real problem not having access to fresh food. You see people in the neighborhood that I work in who are amputees as a result of diabetes. There's just a huge amount of poverty, and there's a huge lack of access to education on how to prepare food.
Charles, didn't you want to set up a project to solve some of these problems?
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that I was that we were thinking of is trying to get Fresh Direct to use their waiver and go in and do a test at a NYCHA housing project where we would actually have nutrition educators and technologically advanced health educators in a lobby just to test it. Okay, so we would put them in there, help people, and be there every single day, help people to put you know, the app on their phone, help them with their orders, give them nutrition education. So, for example, we would these educators would be able to say if someone ordered some sugary cereal, say, okay, what about shredded wheat? We'll give you a free coupon, and we'll you know for the next month to buy as much shredded wheat as you want. You can still buy your cereal, and this is again just an example. And also one of the things that I think maybe you're talking about is when I discussed the concept of having cooking demonstrations and nutrition education. I know they do this, but it's not. It doesn't feel consistent. It does, in supermarket tours, it doesn't feel consistent. It doesn't feel like it feels haphazard and ad hoc. Like when, you know, it should be every day. There should be somebody on staff at supermarkets that can that is a nutrition educator that has a master's degree or has a registered, you know, a licensed registered dietitian to be in these supermarkets. And I know that ShopRite has experimented with that in some of their outside of the New York City area stores. And they're effective in helping people to make better and healthier choices. I don't think it's just about the healthy access. I think it's critical, but I think that people are, you know, people can miss the point here. It's not just like you could throw a supermarket in an area and all of a sudden it's going to change.
In just the few moments we have left, talking about health, Zach from Queens asks, what is the regulation for cleanliness in supermarkets? I live in Jackson Heights, and the grocery stores are incredibly dirty, which is another kind of turnoff. He says he works in food service. They get Department of Health visits and letter grades. Why is there nothing like that in the supermarkets?
Well, I think, again, you know, I think that he's right. And some of the disadvantaged communities, these supermarkets are not brand spanking new and aren't beautiful and would discourage somebody from going in there and shopping and buying their produce and so forth. So I think that that's an important thing to think about. And that's why in the beginning of our conversation we were talking and we were saying how having, you know, brand new supermarkets, which hopefully the Fresh program continues, and having renovated supermarkets really helps the stature of the community and how community, you know, population might feel about their community when they have a brand new supermarket or renovated supermarket.
Charles Platkin is executive director of the New York City Food Policy Center at Hunter College. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.